It's been a crazy couple weeks. How do we feel after the Roe v. Wade decision? How are we going to support our patients in this crazy time? Learn the answers to these questions and many more on this episode of the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast, where it's all about serving the early career physician. Let's talk about the unique issues that face us so we can create a better future for ourselves and those to come. And now your host, Dr. Andrew Tisser.
Hey everybody, it's Andrew, and welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast. I'm so happy you're here. For my returning listeners, thank you so much. For my new listeners, welcome. Because today, like on every episode, I'm bringing you the best guests from all around healthcare and beyond to discuss issues relating to the early career physician. Dr. Erica is board-certified family physician with a focus on women's health. In addition to having a full-time practice, she serves as adjunct faculty at the Idaho College of Osteopathic Medicine, where she teaches courses in women's health and clinical skills. She holds an additional degree, a Bachelor of Arts in English, has published a book, and written several pieces featured in national journals. She serves as an expert physician consultant with appearances on national television, as well as produces written and video social media content for several health and wellness companies. Her passion in making medicine relatable, engaging, and accessible. And with her website, dr-erica.com, she highlights female entrepreneurs, as well as discusses positive aspects of medicine. Her goal is to create a social media presence as an engaging physician who makes medicine fun and relatable to everyone. So let's get my friend Erica onto the show. Dr. Erica, welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I love following you, and I'm excited for our talk today.
Thank you. Likewise. We've been following each other for a long time, and we finally get to do this, so I'm really happy for it. So I recorded a little bit about you, but in your own words, can you tell the audience kind of who you are and what you're all about?
Yeah. Well, I'm a board certified family medicine physician, and I'm an osteopathic physician. So I practice a lot of preventive medicine, and predominantly I focus on women's health. I love women's health education. So I teach at a local medical school, and then I also practice primarily women's health in my practice. I used to do obstetrical care, and I still do minor gynecological procedures. So I've gravitated towards a women's health platform and really growing my online presence now, because as you know, COVID has really taken things for a turn, right? So a lot of what I did has now transitioned into online. So I'm growing my social media presence with free health education and women's empowerment, and really trying to advocate for medicine that's fun and empowering and kind of readily accessible, where people want to listen to it, right? It's not boring anymore, but it's something they want to hear.
Yeah, I agree. I love watching all your stuff. It really is just so relatable. You know, you got the video of you just like taking a bath with bath bombs, right? You know, just like, yeah, I'm a person too, despite having a crazy day, right? Which makes it fun and at the same time makes people want to listen to the medicine and listen to everything more, because you're not some, you know, doctor that, we have to listen to you because you're wearing the white coat kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really important, is you have to be personable and make it fun and film sometimes when you're having bad days. You know, I've got videos on TikTok of me crying and talking about coaching patients who are actively suicidal. And I have videos of me binge eating tacos after I had to counsel someone on weight loss, because I'm a real person too. And we all have our slip ups. So I think what's been nice about that platform is it gives you the flexibility to be a real person, so that people don't just see the sterile environment of a hospital or a doctor's office.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it's also like patients really, you know, this is getting off track, but patients really like to listen to doctors they can relate to. I mean, even just in the ER where I practice, you know, just joke. The other day I was like leaning against a sink, you know, the automatic ones, and it went and turned on, and it got my whole back wet. And I was, you know, it was just like the stupidest goofy moment, or like, oh, God, you know, but like the patients are there. It's probably the worst day of their lives. They're in the emergency room, and they're, you know, they get to have a laugh at the goofy doctor, you know, that did something that we all do all the time. And I think it goes a long way to humanize us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's why I did. It was totally on purpose. Totally.
Yeah. It makes sense, right? I mean, if you're going to listen to somebody who tells you what to do with your own life, you want to make sure that they understand what they're doing with theirs, and they're not a robot, but that they get you and that they're human too. I think it makes it way more personable where I would want to follow the advice of somebody who understood me instead of just quoted stuff out of a book.
Agreed. We're going to have this episode take a really sharp turn because you gave me a segue on talking about what people can do with their own life. And we were going to talk about a whole bunch of other stuff, but I don't know when this episode's coming out, but this has been an interesting week for this country with the overturning of Roe v. Wade and all the fallout that's come with. So I'd like to talk to you about that, given that you're a women's health specialist practicing in one of the states that is pretty restrictive. And the first thing I want to ask you is you know, what was your initial reaction, and how did, you know, where, you know, is this one of those, I know where I was when I heard the news kind of thing?
You know, I've gotten questions about this a ton since it went out, right? From both patients and a lot of my physician colleagues with whom I work with closely, because I do have a pretty aggressive online and like forward-facing profile. I went completely silent. And I'll be really honest with you, I'm still living in dismay, shock, disgust, anger, kind of all the formalities of the grieving process rolled into one, and then action seeking, but I don't know where to seek action. And what I've been telling a lot of people asking me is, I never expected this to happen, right? I mean, I really never expected it to happen. And at this point, when we're trying to seek care and help people and we're being told we're shutting down already. I mean, I just actively had a meeting today with someone in my association asking me what I'm going to do if I can't prescribe medications, life-saving medications for some women. Because remember, birth control is not always just a choice over a pregnancy, right? These are life-saving medicines. And what I'm struggling with is politics have played a role. Religion has played a role. So many people not in medicine have played a role. And it's time for doctors to step and say, no, it's not okay. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to take care of my patient. And so you're asking a great question. And I'm so raw and unscripted right now. And honestly, I'm really pissed off for my patients. I'm not going to lie to you. I think it was an absolute blow to not just women's health, but the entire country, right? Men are affected too. And we need to do that as a whole. We need to step up for our patients, and our patients need to know that we haven't gone anywhere and that we're not going to take political threat or political misgivings or misguidance and judgments and decisions made not by physicians regarding medical care. That's something I firmly believe in. We can't just sit idly by and accept these terms. And I understand it's a heated debate. I mean, I've already had a lot of discussions online, even some that I really didn't want to have. I don't want it to turn ugly, and I don't want it to turn negative. I want it to be patient-centric, patient care, love for my patients, our Hippocratic oath of doing no harm. Well, the female patient comes first in my book. And for me, in my women's health practice, I mean, and if I turn a blind eye to that, I'm not doing them justice. So me as a provider, me as a physician, me as a person, me as an osteopathic healer, I'm sad. But I don't want to just stop there and say that I'm sad. And I don't want to respond in anger like a lot of people have. I want to respond in nurturing positivity, education, and seeking out methods and help and resources so that my patients who don't have access in my state have resources nearby and they won't suffer. Because at the end of the day, if they shut me down, so be it. I'm not going to stop because my patients have needs. And that has to come first. It has to come first.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, thank goodness, you know, that they have you. And I agree. I mean, I agree with everything you said. And unfortunately, you know, I hear a lot of, you know, I live in New York, right? So we're a safe haven state. And so it's like, well, thank God we live in New York. But that is I think that's a terrible sentiment, right? I mean, yes, thank God we live in New York. Absolutely. I'm not going to say I'm not happy about it. But don't think that this is just going to, you know, escape you because you live in New York. You know, I'm also in Buffalo, New York, really close to the Pennsylvania border, which is very close to the Ohio border, right? You know, this is going to affect everyone in one shape or form. And I think I agree. I mean, my wife and I also just a lot of anger, and even the writing has been on the wall for months, right? We we've known this was probably going to happen, and it was still shocking that it happened.
Yeah.
Right. It's still, you know, how many times do you remember just going back to grade school, learning about Roe v. Wade and what a step forward that was for this country. And then as it stands, my daughter will have less rights than her grandmother at this point. Right. Not New York, but that's not the point. So
I hate that saying, and it's so true. It resonates. I mean, think about what you just said. Your child has fewer rights than her grandmother. And just let that sink in. I have a daughter too, and I have a son, and I'm raising them equally to respect all genders, all people. And I have no idea what I'm going to say when they're older. And I'm hoping, honestly, that something will be overturned. I think a lot of physicians are. And I think the struggle we have is a lot of this was pushed through our legislature in 2020, right? When we're at the peak of COVID and trying to just survive and trying to figure out a pandemic. And then you see that the inner workings were happening so long ago when all we could do was keep our head afloat, and seeing millions of people die. So to have this pass on top of that just completely boggles my mind. I think what I'm trying to focus on at this point is so many of us really are still in shock of, okay, well, something's going to happen. We're going to be able to fight it. We're going to be able to change it. And I'm hopeful that it will happen that way. I mean, there's too many women's lives at stake for it to stay as is, truthfully. And I do have optimism there. But I'm also a realist. And that's where I plan to look for resources. So, you know, I work with an online company, Fem Health Project. I've produced videos for another one, Simple Health, that provides online access to contraception. There's a great website, 3 for Freedom, that women can go to that talks about birth control options, but also things like Plan B and actually medications to help if you are in a situation you didn't want to be in and you don't have access to care. Her Health Collective is another great one that I've worked with that talks to mothers about access for all women's healthcare needs. So, I mean, these are 4 easily accessible online resources that everybody has, and they're not going to be shut down. And that's what I want to focus on, is maybe certain states or certain regions or certain areas won't have access to care, which just devastates me, like beyond belief, right? Like, I wish I could convey through this podcast how sick I am right now as a physician who has to tell her patients, I don't know if I can help you because I'm physically being told I can't. I mean, that's just against all inherent goodness in my heart as a physician, right? But at least I won't stop there. I now can say, well, guess what? There are resources. There's other places and avenues we can go, and we can get you the care that you need. And thank God for that. Thank God for states like your state. Thank God for people and programs and platforms that have stepped up to the plate and said no and have released statements showing their support. I've been very overwhelmingly grateful to the medical organizations that have stepped up and released statements, ACOG, my gosh, the American Academy of Pediatricians. Yeah. Like, when you see these medical organizations standing together, that's what we need. We need a platform that's unified, not all these specialties working to keep their patients safe and alive and healthy, but one collective front of medical professionals coming together and saying, enough is enough, everybody. Like, I don't know where you're coming from and why you thought you could restrict this, but you have no grounds in making a decision for my patient. I do. I went through the training. It's her life. It's her health. This is what matters. So if I'm not allowed to do it, which is absolutely ridiculous that I even have to say that, I'm so grateful that these other options are still out there. And that's what we need to focus on, getting our patients access. And that's why social media makes such a big difference, right? I never thought I'd be a doctor dancing on TikTok and making these ridiculous videos. And to be quite honest, I really did think you and I were going to be talking about my happy-go-lucky platforms, because that's what I'm about. Like, I love making medicine fun and joyful, and it has purpose. But you know what? There's times when everything isn't peachy, and today sucked, and last week was terrible, and we have to meet that with something. We can't just be silent. I was silent long ago. I'm not going to do it anymore.
I agree. And you know what? We're going to do the follow-up episode where we're dancing and having fun. But you know what? we have to at this point. We owe it to the listeners. But I mean, absolutely. Right. And I think for so long, you know, the saying is that getting physicians to agree on anything is like herding cats. And I think COVID and now this has finally brought docs to, I think, physicians as a whole, the ones that are left, to the ones that aren't leaving the profession, are just pissed, right? They're just pissed. And so that's a force to be reckoned with, right? You're talking about some of the, you know, most educated, highly intelligent, type A people in the country that are starting to get together, and social media just amplifies the voices. And you know what, honestly, before COVID, I would say I was a pretty apolitical person. You know, I voted and I did my part, but I didn't talk about politics. I didn't read about it. I just lived my life. And then COVID happened, and you know, whatever you want to say about our previous president and so on, be made me into a political person. And now, unfortunately, I'm being forced into this. But like, how do you just say, you can't be apathetic and stay silent anymore, because it's just, you just can't. Right. So that being said, you know, you've listed some resources for action for your patients. How about how are you going to emotionally support them? And maybe, do you have any tips for the listeners that in some of the, you know, in obstetrics, in family practice, internists, et cetera, that deal with these issues all the time, even emergency docs that are either in training or newly minted attendings going into this craziness? How do we sit with these feelings that are all too real and raw? And how do we support our patients emotionally?
Yeah. Well, you know, it brings me back to when I first graduated residency and I was used to this huge hospital system and I had so many friends and doctors and I knew everybody and I felt like I had this huge unified group of friends, right? This community. And then I moved across the country to start my new practice, and there's only one other doctor in my practice at the time. And I was like, where are all my friends? I felt isolated. I felt alone. And it was really hard in the beginning because you're working so hard to build this medical practice, but at the end of the day, you have no support, nobody that really gets you, and you're alone. And it was a huge shock to me. And it took me, gosh, a couple of years actually before I finally was like, wow, you know, is this it? Like, is this the light at the end of the tunnel? Is this my arrival fallacy? Like, wow, like, what do I do now? And I went online and I found some physician community groups through Facebook. Joined them, met some incredible doctors, found you, found Kevin Poe, wrote for him, went on his podcast a couple of times talking specifically about doctors and social media. And do we have a place there? And I was like, this is fun. I have friends again. I have community. But it wasn't just like the social aspect, right? Like, if you're a doctor, you automatically bond with any other physician. Like, it's like we went through the same initiation. We understand all the hardships we went through to get there. And we have the same mental capacity and really kind of the same mindset in general. So we automatically click. But on top of that, I saw these doctors doing other things and finding their passion projects. And they were such better doctors because they were happy and they didn't feel isolated in the world of medicine. And everyone, you know, criticizes doctors for having personalities. I want a type A doctor who has no social life. I don't want my doctor to go on maternity leave. I want them to always be at the bedside. And, you know, the more I looked into it, our satisfaction directly impacted our productivity and our success at work. So I started speaking on a level of, well, why is happiness so important? Why is meaning in medicine so important? Well, because you can't have burned out, exhausted physicians. We're going to become robotic. We're going to miss the details. We're going to miss the nuances. We're going to miss the connection with our patients. And in family medicine, and in ER medicine too, I mean, you're forward facing with patients, as you said, probably on some of the worst days of their life, especially you, maybe the worst day of their life, right? When they come in with an emergency. And if you don't have the capacity to meet them on an empathetic level, how good of a doctor are you going to be, right? You might get the labs correct, but are you going to miss other stuff? Are you going to miss maybe the person who came in for a different reason? You know, I'll have a lot of patients come in with a chief complaint of a cough, and really half an hour later, they are severely depressed and were suicidal, and they could care less about a cough, but they didn't want to admit that to my secretary when they called in for the appointment. And had I been so, you know, stuck on, well, your smoking history and doing an x-ray and let's do some pulmonary function, blah, 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 the whole workup. Wow, how much could I have missed? So the advice that I give to my students when I teach them, and the advice that I give to other physicians who are starting out, is make your friends now and make your community huge and make it fun. And I have goosebumps right now because genuinely there are so many of us, right? There's over 100,000 plus, actually way more than that, of just osteopathic physicians. We're one in a million. There's about a million physicians right now in counting. And unfortunately, you know, in about a decade, the AAMC estimates about 20% of that's retirement age. Well, guess what? Let's capitalize on the ones that we still have. Let's unify. Let's become friends. Let's find the joy and the passion projects and the fun where you have another doctor who supports you and says, hey, I tried this. This works for me. Don't get burned out here. This is a tip that I did. This is a strategy I had. I became such a better doctor and I became such a better person because I'm happier. And I want my students to not just focus on their board scores and getting into the specialty of their choice and going into residency with the best attitude ever and neglecting who they are, because we lose so much of that from day one of medical school. And I don't want them to lose it. I want them to start off strong. So I even serve on admissions for the school that I teach at. And I love it because I see all these hopefuls, right? Like, you remember when you were interviewing and you were so freaked out, like, this is my whole life. Like, if I mess up this interview, oh my gosh, like everything's going to implode. At least I was like that. I got in a pillow fight the night before with my mom because I was terrified and she had to like do something to get my nervous energy out. Well, guess what? I'm on the other side now. And I'll have a stressful day, or I'll be trying to plan dinner, or I'll be worried about a patient I saw that afternoon and had to rush over to do an interview. And I'm like, you know, let's just like break it down as we're people. I'm going to interview you as your interests, your side projects. Who makes you, you? What do you do that makes you stand out? What makes you a person I'd want to see on my worst day? And I try to not be intimidating and a physician that people are scared to approach with candor, because I need that honesty. And so the interviewees are really fun because I get to see people who have really cool hobbies and interests in volunteerism that maybe they didn't highlight because they didn't think it would make the mark on their resume. And yet they have done beautiful things that need to be celebrated in their communities. And when I see that smile and that spark, I tell them to lose it. Because that's what's going to make you a great doctor. If you get into medical school, you pass medical school, you pass your boards, you will be a great physician. We are type A. We are excellent clinicians. We are intelligent. We have high IQs. We are passionate about what we're doing. We're not going to sacrifice patient safety or adequacy of care. But what next? There has to be something more. I don't want them to lose their spirit, their hope, their happiness, their drive. That's what we want to capitalize on.
Agreed. That is such a perfect answer to the question of how do we support our patients emotionally? Well, we're supporting ourselves emotionally. We're real people and we're allowed to be upset, right? And sometimes it's okay to show that because again, it humanizes us. I think that's a great point. It's, you know, it's funny. It made me think of this past Monday. I don't know why they did this, but I had a brand new family medicine intern and they started her in the emergency department. I don't know why they did that. That was mean.
And I want to give her a hug.
Very mean. And so it's first day as a doctor in the emergency department with the director of the emergency department, right?
Oh, man.
So, right, so that's tough, right? And so she's presenting her first patient and stumbling over words, and she's like, I don't know why I can't think of the word. And I was like, well, it's because you're nervous. And she's like, what? And I was like, yeah, it's because you're nervous, because it's your first day as a doctor in a new residency, and their first patient that you're presenting as a physician. That's why. And she's like, yeah, that's right. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Now what?
Yeah.
Right. And so, and that's okay. We're allowed to be nervous. We're allowed to stumble on our words, and we're allowed to, you know, how many times do I go in a room and talk to a patient at the end of a workup and say, I have no idea what's wrong with you. No idea. Yeah. You know, and patients appreciate that instead, yes, of like, well, you know, could be this, you know, could be that, but I'm going to do some more tests and I don't know, you should go see your doctor about it. Like, I don't know. I know a lot of stuff you don't have. I know a lot of things that you're not dying from today, but I don't know why. And I'm not saying you don't have symptoms. Yeah, I'm sure you do. I just don't know what it is. And people appreciate that.
Right? Yeah.
Because we're not so godlike. You know, I don't know how we got here, but Nevertheless, I think the point of the matter is that we're allowed to show our humanity as physicians, especially when we're having a really terrible, unprecedented couple of weeks. And let's be honest, we're not getting over this anytime soon, because the stories are going to continue come out about, you know, I'm hearing stories out of Michigan that rheumatoid arthritis patients are being denied methotrexate, right, and such things, and like crazy stuff. And we're just going to see crazier stuff. So we're going to get pissed for a while. And it's okay to show that to our patients, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think coming to the defense of your patients in a realistic way. I mean, you know, when we started our talk tonight and you asked me the very first question about my thoughts on what just happened, and I told you I was silent, I think there's power in that too. Holding space when patients ask you and you're just quiet and say, I don't know. I'm right there with you. And I've approached COVID with that too. You know, I'll get a lot of people who are really anti-vaccine or conspiracy theorists of COVID not in existence in the first place, who actively have it and are on oxygen. And I try to tell them, like, I'm not trying to argue to be right. I'm trying to rationalize so that you'll help me get you the best care that you need. So I want to understand why you don't want the vaccine or why you're refusing treatment for COVID when you tested positive, even though you're saying it doesn't exist. How can I understand where you're coming from? And a lot of what I got was, well, I've done my own research. I've done more studies and research than you. And, you know, at first I was kind of pissed off. I'm not going to lie. Like, to have somebody say, like, my graduate medical education meant very little to their reading Google was kind of like, really? Okay. But you know, at the end of the day, I don't have to be right. I just have to be respectful. And so when I allowed patients to explain themselves and tell me why they had fears or why they had questions or doubts, and I explained, I have them too. You know, COVID hasn't been around since I started medical school. Sure, coronavirus has, but this strain hasn't, the severity hasn't. I don't know. I'm learning alongside with you. Let's learn together. And I'm going to do my part in my scientific brain to figure out what I can do to help you. But if you have questions, ask. I had such a better response after that. You know, when I admitted, I don't know everything. I don't even know one hundredth of what COVID is doing right now. I don't. I think people need to hear that instead of thinking that we are the omnipresent answer. And if they doubt us, then they're wrong and the relationship ends. I think if you meet things with respect, meet people with respect, and then admit when you don't know something, as you mentioned, there's so much more power in that. I think with women's health, it's a little bit different because we know collectively mechanisms of things that can help with women's health that have been now withdrawn. And that's the scary thing as a physician, is knowing a mode of treatment to save a life has been removed. That's where the anger is coming from. We have evidence. We have statistical proof of what is necessary. And we're being told no. And we're being told that we're denying the rights of a fetus, or we're taking a political or religious stance, when I'm looking at a female patient in front of me and saying, no, I'm protecting her. So the anger is much more real in this instance, because I'm being told I can't give proper, adequate, necessary medical care. So again, circling back, we need to join forces. We need physicians to stand strong. We need patients to realize we're not going anywhere, and we're not backing down, and we're not going to be dismissed. And it's not a proud thing. It's a, I'm going to defend you thing. And that's what patients need to hear, because we're all scared.
I know. I agree. That is so well said too. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what this match cycle brings. Because, you know, I we'll see. I don't know for the people training in OBGYN and those specialties, I really wonder, how it's going to shake out. It's certainly going to make certain programs in certain states more competitive than they ever were. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. And you know, what is and what isn't going to be allowed to be taught, and how do you get through a residency without performing procedures that, you know, it's such a long conversation, but I think the point of this episode is you're allowed to be angry. You should be angry. Support your patients, give them resources, and we need to unite to fight this. I think that's That's the take home message, right? And take care of yourself, and allow yourself to feel the feeling so that you can feel and hold space for your patients.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the despair is something that's natural and it needs to be voiced. And I've started wearing t-shirts that have different statements on them about women's health and women's empowerment, or just equality and equity for everyone. And the responses I get are like, wow, you're my cool doctor. And I'm like, well, yeah, what I used to wear, you know, like my button down shirt, my white coat. So like, today I had an everyone welcome shirt on and I got so many patients staring at me and I forgot for a while, like what I was wearing. And I realized, wow, I got so many smiles and comments afterwards. Like, thank you. That's really cool that you're doing that. You know, like we have a much bigger platform than we give ourselves credit for, right? Like our heads have been buried in books forever and we don't really like social media. And when I first started doing national news, I hope that the producers aren't listening to this, but I was freaking mortified to be on a national news network, right? My face, like really, like we're not trained for that. But I love it because why wouldn't we want to reach an audience and provide access to care and free information and medical information that maybe they're afraid to ask about? And now they have a jumping off point. So when they go to see their doctor, they can say, hey, I heard another board certified doctor talk about this. I think it's applicable to me. Wow. Already you're starting off the visit so much stronger instead of coming in with confusion or too afraid to even ask the question in the first place. Well, let's make it fun now. Let's jump on social media. Let's jump on Instagram. I love what you're doing on there because we need to have fun with it. I love your Twitter account because it's relevant. You talk about personal issues, fun issues, and then you talk about healthcare. And that's what I think people need to see is a fun, present doctor who is relatable, but also gets it and is also still up to date on medical information. So I love TikTok. I mean, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I hate the fact that I hear that I'm the older generation and I'm a geriatric millennial. That term sucks.
God.
Yeah, right?
Jeez, when did that happen, you know?
So
you know, Erica, well, I gotta interrupt because a few weeks ago I was in the ER, we were talking about candy, and I said some apparently unpopular opinion about York peppermint patties, and the pharmacist who's like 24 was like, yeah, maybe your generation believes that. I'm like, oh my god, no.
that whole shift hurt, didn't it?
threw me into a wall. But yeah, I mean, it's fun. We're having fun with it. And, you know, and when the older nurses are like, I saw you were on TikTok and they were laughing. I was like, well, I got to make you laugh. So, you know what? Yeah. It's a better day for you.
You know, some of my favorite people to follow are octogenarians. Some of my favorite people to follow are 20. I don't care your age. I care your relevance. And I care that you have a good heart and you're making it fun and you have a purpose. So for physicians, what I'm trying to get a message across, and again, when I teach students and I show them, hey, if you have questions, you can follow me here or you can jump on my TikTok account. And all the faces look up. Finally, I get 200 sets of eyeballs looking at me after an hour-long lecture, which I thought was incredible. But of course, you say TikTok, boom, I get the eyes. You know what, though? It drove something home. It proved a point. There's relevance like in that speech, right? There's pertinence in what I'm saying when I get your attention. I think doctors have a space in social media and we need to take back the medical misinformation that's been thriving. And that I think is super important to train young physicians coming up is you don't have to censor yourself completely. You know, I grew up in the age where I was actually told by my programs, delete your Facebook accounts, wipe everything clean, make everything private. Don't even post a picture of yourself walking into the hospital, even if words or, you know, lettering from the hospital aren't in it. Like we don't want to see any of it. And I think to a certain degree, you have to practice a very fine line of being appropriate and not being insensitive to patients, right? Because there's a big problem if you do that. And respecting the organizations with which you work. But at the same time, you need to have fun with it. And some of the people that I follow that make me laugh provide the best medical information because they're dancing or they're doing trends and they're spinning it with healthcare info. That's the stuff that I want. I want a 20-year-old who's not going to go to the doctor because they don't like doctors to watch what I'm talking about and realize, oh my gosh, I do need help. I'm going to seek care now because I'm not scared to ask. Or wow, that's exactly the question that I had. How cool is it? In a minute, I could deliver information that they hadn't sought treatment for maybe a decade because they were scared when they were a kid to ask for help. And finally, they're a young adult and they're realizing they're coming into their own. And if that's the platform where we're going to reach them, so be it. I think it's awesome. It's just very different than what we did in medical school. And that's okay.
It is. But hey, meet them where they are, right?
Yeah.
Well, Erica, we're running out of time. So I think let's just leave it with if you could give one single piece of advice to the early career physician, what would that be?
Unify your army now. Without a doubt. And I didn't even have that planned. I didn't know you were going to ask me that. But I've never said that before. But I feel so strongly about it. Find your friends in medicine. Keep those bonds. Go online. Networks with physicians. Form a community. Advocate. Make those bonds strong so at the end of the day, you're not alone. And no matter where you practice in this country and what is revoked or what is reinstated, you have support, you have friends, you have leadership, you have people you can answer to and people who can answer to you. Because we're peers and we need a team of collective spirits, minds, hearts that can serve patients. And when we're unified, I'm really not afraid that a lot else can happen negatively. And our patients certainly will be the better for it if we stand together.
Love it. Love it. Erica, thank you so much for coming on the show. You know, sorry we had to hit you with the hard questions, but you handled it wonderfully. And I think everything you said should be listened to 2, 3, 4 times because it's just so important. I'm going to put a link to all your platforms in the show notes so people can find you and follow you and listen to all the great stuff you have to say and have fun with you, alongside you, and share some of the hardship with you as well, because I think the ups and downs are just so important. But once again, thank you for coming on the show, and we're going to do that part 2.
I love it. Thank you, Andrew, and I will look forward to dancing with you when we celebrate that one. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Bye-bye. What a great episode with Dr. Norm Chapin. I really enjoyed the conversation. If you like this show, please remember to go on Apple Podcasts and leave me an honest rating and review, as well as share it with at least 2 of your friends or colleagues. The other thing I'd like you to do after listening is follow me on LinkedIn, Andrew Tisser DO. That's all we have for today, everybody. As always, keep talking.
All opinions expressed by the guest in this episode are solely the guest's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof. The guest's opinions are based upon information he or she considers reliable, but Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, nor any affiliates thereof warrant its completeness or accuracy. The guest, Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided in this episode. The guest's statements and opinions are subject to change without notice.